They could literally buy every pair of shoes that they see and want. We could do that. We'd be just fine. And we will not do that. They're not going to buy every pair of shoes that they want because they have to learn this thing, this saying no, doing with less, living below your means. We want to be aggressive givers, builders, etc. We have ambitions that are, they're beyond this moment. They're generations away. We want to be building that.
Hi, I'm Steve. For nearly 30 years, I've been a pastor and disciple maker, and what I really love doing is helping guys be better followers of Christ and better leaders at home.
I'm Mark, a certified financial planner with an MBA and an Ivy League degree who wants to make sure you're making the smartest money decisions possible.
And this is Abraham's Wallet. Join us weekly and create a culture in your family of multi-generational prosperity, spiritually, relationally, physically, intellectually, and financially. Run your home, your dough, like a biblical boss. How did the fantasy basketball league end up going for you?
Well, I'm going to just say this. I got a notification last night from a man in China who told me that I was to expect a delivery in the next week.
Okay.
And this delivery, what I anticipate, because I ordered it, what I anticipate to find inside the box that I open is a ring that says the name of my team, the Funeral Thespians, which is a nod to our Half-Baked Ideas episode that we did earlier, towards the end of last year, I think. And it says Champions 2024 Fantasy Basketball. So I told you that I would be ordering a championship ring for myself and that I would also be funding the championship ring of next year's winner, and that we would make this a thing. My hope is to have so many rings on my hands that I have trouble opening doorknobs in a decade.
That is amazing. Is it kind of gaudy looking?
Yeah, I went for the white gold, although it's brass. They did have the option to upgrade to sterling silver for money. I said, no, thank you.
Yeah,
I went with the sort of silver color. I went with a dark, they had to choose your stone. I went with a dark blue, really just in honor of our Dallas Mavericks who are about a playoff run.
Yeah.
And then the text, I mean, let's hope that these Chinese false championship ring makers spell everything right, because I think there's a risk.
Yeah.
There's a risk there, but.
Yeah. Yeah, what you could get a ring and it's going to like say, you know, be happy always on it, like the t-shirts and the hats. That it's just random English words.
Who knows?
That's very fun. Please put a video of yourself wearing this ring up at our little Abe's Wallet video share site. Would you please do that?
Sure.
Okay. NCAA tournament brackets, of which we had a lot of people participating in. I was very happy to see. We had a winner that I've never met or heard from before, and I'm going to take the opportunity to name Clark Diedrich. Clark Diedrich won the whole thing. Not only did he win our brackets, but I think he was in the top one percentile of all brackets on ESPN.com. Not only did he pick UConn to win the whole thing, I think he had something like 5 out of his elite 8. Like incredible, an incredible bracket. So kudos to Clark. I think he will have gotten it by the time this airs, so I'll just let the cat out of the proverbial bag here and say what Abe's Wallet did for Clark was sent him a potpourri, a mishmash of items that are from and inspired by the state of Connecticut, which he doesn't live in, but he picked them to win and they did win. So a lot of Connecticut stuff in a little grab bag.
Best pizza I've ever had was in Connecticut. There's a fun fact. You know who got third place in the Abraham's Wallet fantasy bracket?
Not me. Was it Amelia?
It was my wife.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And she picked Purdue?
Connecticut.
She picked Connecticut. She picked UConn, the Huskies.
Yeah. Now, did she pick UConn, or did Mark want to fill several brackets out and say, honey, this one's going to be yours?
Great question.
It doesn't really matter. Know. The point is, she was rooting for them once it came clear that she had a chance at a top 10 finish.
Was there any crowing around the house? Did she brag about her win?
No. If you ask her today, I'm not sure she could tell you what place she came in.
All right. Enough of it. Okay. Listen, here's the question. You've heard of Abraham. You've heard of Abraham's wallet. And if we could plop Abraham, Father Abraham, into our world right now, even if he met a handful of us, I wonder what he would say. What would be his reactions? I think there's just a couple of basic and provocative things that he might say looking around at us that I think would be useful for us to hear. So I'm just going to ask the question, what would Abraham say to a young man in 2024?
Can we say like the initial things he would say first? Just right, we unfreeze him, we set him down right here in Abraham's wallet HQ. The first things he's going to say are...
Smoked brisket is delicious.
That is true. I think...
I think that smoked brisket would almost fit into his palate worldview. So it'd be like the best grilled food he's ever had. And he would think, I'm not interested in your like blue raspberry Slurpees. I don't know what that is. I don't want to drink foam. But he's like, Texas brisket, the wet side.
It's the flavor that transcends time.
And cross cultures and history. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Go on.
I don't think he has anything to say about, podcasting or the internet or airplanes. I think that's all dark magic to him. So I think he's just going to decline to comment there.
Yeah.
I think if we're able to calm him down and revive him after multiple fainting spells.
You're right.
Once we've sat over a brisket and maybe he's gone, okay, this isn't all witchery, then he's going to start asking some pretty hard questions about, now you're telling me there's gatherings of people that worship the true God and they get together and like half of them are in their 30s hoping to be married someday and they have no children. He's going to have questions about that.
He would.
He's going to have questions about these people that you point to and you say they're rich. They don't seem to have any land, slaves, or cattle. So what do you mean? He's not going to quite understand what we mean by rich. And he's also going to look at a bunch of 55-year-old guys that are, dubbed elders in the community and go, well, it seems like these guys don't behave like elders. They leave their families. They go and they seem to behave like my slaves, where they just work for somebody all day long. And you're telling me they're rich. And so I think those are some of the questions he's going to ask. Now, I know that you're explaining to him a little bit of the how society works. What do you think Abraham says to our crew of listeners once he gets his head around what the heck is going on here?
Yeah, there's going to be a lot he doesn't understand. But once he gets his head around it, he's going to sit down with a small group of guys. I envision, as guys these days, they don't want to get together in like a Bible study group with a coffee table around them. What do they want to get around, Mark, when men get together?
I think their favorite might be, if they're in my crew, is a little solo stove campfire.
Gotta be a fire.
There's a fire, and they're maybe not at your house, but there might be a little bit of Kentucky bourbon involved.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Well, he's comfortable with both of those things, and he's very comfortable with fire. But I'm imagining us in like our Adirondack chairs around the edge, and then he's sitting there with his sandals and a robe on.
He's in a full Middle Eastern squat where you can just squat and be there for 4 hours and think it's the most comfortable thing in the world.
Yeah. What we're going to do is we're going to walk through this narration about Abraham's life from Genesis 11 to Genesis 15. Abraham is introduced to us in Genesis 11 as a character. And Genesis 11 is the Tower of Babel. And the Tower of Babel happens, and then there's just, as an aside, a setup for the next chapter. By the way, there's this guy, and he's out there and tells about his father's family line. And one of the very first things we learn about Abram, it's his name at the time, Abram, is what the choices that he makes for starting out his life. Abraham would not at all understand why in the world would you go buy an expensive car on credit when you get your first significant paycheck. That would not cross Abraham's mind. He would say to us, number one, mate. That's it. A one verb, mate. Who you mate with matters. And do not delay in doing it. What do you do when you are of a working age, when you're able to leave your father's home? You mate. Of course, you find a suitable companion and you go for it. So I just want to make some observations about Sarah. Abram's hope of progeny would have been originally through her alone. I can say that it should have been through her alone. So the covenant that he was going to later make with the king of the universe was to be expressed through her alone. And, you know, she was barren. He didn't know that at the time. And even that barrenness wasn't a limitation, but I think Abram would shrug his shoulders, as you said, to see a 30-year-old man who's not married. Abram would have no understanding of that whatsoever. One thing I want to say is that Abram and Sarah were faithful to each other to the very end. Sarah, for us, is an elevated figure as he was the father of many nations, and she was the mother of Israel. We know of some sins of hers that happened along the way. She didn't do great all the time. We know she was beautiful. That came up not only in her youth, but in her old age. But they were faithful to one another. And I think he would probably, knowing what he knows now, he would say, seek the king's guidance on who you choose.
I think the other thing he would say is, gather around, young boys. Let me tell you about what happens when you step outside of God's plan for marriage and reproduction. You will hit an age in life where you start looking around and going, there's people making some really messed up decisions when it comes to fidelity in marriage. Or then maybe they didn't get married as young as they would like to, and now they're making some compromises about who they might marry or date or be in romantic relationships with. And I think Abraham would grab those people by the scruff of the...
Woo!
This? What is this? This is the collar. And say, let me tell you how this goes when you step outside of God's plan for family, sex, marriage, all of that stuff. Because he was married to Sarah. They produced the promise that God had given them. But before all that happened, he also stepped outside of God's plan. And really created a gigantic mess for himself and eventually the entire world.
Planet Earth.
Yeah. Yes. So I think Abraham would have a lot to say about that. We have done whole episodes on what it looks like when you play the movie forward for somebody who's thinking about, well, would I like to step outside of God's plan for sexual fidelity? It doesn't end well. Abraham can tell you that. And I think he would probably want to grab our young guys and smack them upside the head if they were thinking about maybe making some compromises there.
Yeah. Okay. Number two. Now let's go ahead to Genesis number 12. Now this is the big moment of Abram's life. And I think that he would definitely say that all of us should get ready to do something completely new in God. That's what he would say to a young man, which is, look, whatever family you came from, wherever you think your starting point was financially, spiritually, get ready to do something completely new in God. we cannot fathom what it was like for a man who had no Bible, who had never heard of God. Maybe there were stories of the Creator. I don't know. But there was no temple to go to. There were no priests. There was no professional who could teach him about God. There was no book he could read. For God to confront him and call him to himself and start making promises that if you will follow me, I'm going to do these things for you, was something completely new, utterly different than what his father had ever known or seen or done. He had a new relationship with God, unlike anybody had ever had, maybe since Adam on planet Earth had this relationship with God. And it was a different relationship than even Adam had had. He had a different relationship with his wife than others had had, because there was this covenant thing that was happening with him and her with God that had to do with promise. So they are thinking about, wait, this promise that's been made to us, that kind of promise wasn't made to anybody else prior. He was 75 when he set out for this new land that God said, I'm going to show you. And so he goes out in faith. He's totally, again, doing something completely new. It's a new kind of fathering that he's called for, because how many kids did he end up having? I don't know. There was a time when he wasn't going to be having any kids, so he thought, and yet he was fathering. I'll get to that in a minute. He had a whole bunch of men underneath his roof that he was caring for and training. Is the word that we're given is training. So he's fathering a whole bunch of guys. He's having new supernatural experiences that nobody's ever had. He has this incredible interaction with this character called Melchizedek, who some people think was Jesus himself that interacted with Abraham. God came with skin on, called himself the Prince of Peace, the Prince of Shalom, Melchizedek. And all I want to throw out to our people is, it is absolutely possible that you would have supernatural experiences with God that your parents have never had, that nobody that you know has ever had. And yet if you'll seek God, you can be on a completely different trajectory than anybody that's come before you, which is very exciting. He had a brand new vision for a long-term family, as I mentioned, and there were new methods for provision and legacy. There was just innovation everywhere. What's going to happen? Where am I? What'll be my new business where I go? God's like, we're going to deal with that later. We're going to go to a new place. What will my family be like? We're going to deal with that. We're going to a new place. So I think that's a major thing that he would say to all of us, is be expectant about doing something new. It reminds me of just a few weeks ago, we did an episode on the new patriarchs. And I just love that mindset that says we haven't seen before what we're going to become. I love that pioneering attitude. And Abraham absolutely had that.
Yeah. I mean, I think we were talking about that last week when we talked about family vision.
Yes. Yes.
I think it would be interesting to kick Abraham our family vision statements, because he's kind of the ultimate family vision guy. Which is,
yeah, I think so.
My family vision is that I would have some children, and through them, all the earth would be redeemed.
Right.
And so far, so good on the Abrahamic family vision. I don't think he could have enunciated to us exactly how that was going to pan out. Just like I think when our guys are on the campfire go, well, we're a family that feels called to have hearts of mercy and hospitality. I would hope that that guy could fast forward 2,000 or 3,000 years if we're still on this earth and see his generations. And they go, well, let me tell you how that shook out. And he goes, whoa, I think Abraham would have a similar response.
Right. That's right. Okay. Number three, moving forward to Genesis 13. This is the story of he and Lot, and their herds are becoming so big that they're started crowding on their lands. Their herdsmen are getting into conflict, and Abram and Lot have a conversation, and Abram says, I want you to choose the land that you want, and we'll split and we'll go separate ways in peace. And there is something in Abram, although even by that time, he was very wealthy. He was the uncle, so he had the seniority on the family hierarchy. He ranked higher than Lot, and he came to Lot and said, you pick. For us, we have all these ambitions about growing wealth to honor God, but we mustn't take this place of being haughty or proud or self-important or having inflated ego. I think he would say, don't be selfish and don't be greedy, even with your wealth, that we stay servants, we stay humble, we stay giving, we stay low to the ground.
I'm going back to that campfire scene and thinking about him saying, okay, so you've got, well, that is a lot of wealth. You have enough money like to buy a machine that can hurl you through sort of air or along the roadway at 100 miles an hour. That sounds like it's probably the most expensive thing that anybody could ever own. And you've got enough wealth to get one. And you're going like, I'm going to spend 5 times that much to get one with really nice seats in it. And he's kind of looking at you going, well, what about expanding your land holdings and acquiring more assets to strengthen your family? It seems like, based on what I know about this chariot that you're going to get, like, it seems like they last only about 10 years. And so I think that's right. And it's generosity towards others, but it's also generosity towards generations that's true. Exhibited.
That's right. Yeah. On that note, we've talked about this before, but I often take the opportunity to tell my children, we could do that also, but we don't. Whether it's cable TV or driving the fanciest cars or flying private or all the things that you could do and you say no to, I want my children to know from this multi-generational standpoint, if we liquidated assets or whatever, we can pretty much do whatever there is on offer on earth with the wealth that we have. And we're not doing any of those things. We're not choosing to do that. And that's so important for me, for my children to learn. They could literally buy every pair of shoes that they see and want. We could do that. We'd be just fine. And we will not do that. They're not going to buy every pair of shoes that they want because they have to learn this thing, this saying no, doing with less, living below your means. We want to be aggressive givers, builders, etc. We have ambitions that are, they're beyond this moment. They're as you say, they're generations away. We want to be building that thing in them.
I had a really interesting chat with my oldest daughter yesterday, because I was going through my family's financial plan and I kind of looked at it and I said, huh, you know, we have funded the education fund such that if our kids, all three, decide to go to college, that's funded at this point. It's paid for.
Wow, that's awesome.
And I think similar to retirement, same deal with retirement. I'm like, we could probably not put another dollar into retirement accounts and we would not have to stop kind of the lifestyle that we want to have in retirement.
Yeah.
And so I was talking to my daughter and I shared that with her. I said, hey, you know, if you end up going to college, college is something that we have funds to cover. And we're going to keep saving the exact same amount every single month because I'm trying to cover private school, if you choose to do it, for your kids and college for them. And she goes, whoa, that's cool. Because like I think like one of the great struggles when we were just starting out with kids is like, how could we ever afford private school?
Of course.
Thankfully, God has been gracious to us and allowed us to afford it. But, you know, that's not a given that every kid of mine will be called into professions or
yep,
starting businesses that fund that type of thing. So I want to just push some of that wealth out into the future, instead of doing what I think is kind of the normal, which is like, hey, we got that box checked, so let's triple the vacation spending fund.
Right.
So it was just a cool conversation.
I love that.
It might sound braggy. She's a teenager, so she's old enough to kind of handle that information.
Yeah.
But also, I wanted her to go exactly what you said. our family could do more just spending stuff now, and they are choosing not to because of my children. And I want that to get into the bloodstream so that she starts thinking that way for her children and my great-grandchildren.
Amen. That's awesome. Okay. Number 4 out of 5. We got 5 points. We're already on number 4. What would Abraham say if he met a handful of young men today? He would say, mate. And he would say, who you mate matters. Secondly, get ready to do something new in God. Number 3, don't be selfish and greedy, even in your wealth. But number 4, this is from Genesis 14. We read an amazing story of Lot being captured and in trouble. And Abraham, as an aging man, I don't know what he could personally do in that situation, if it was just him. But guess what? It was not just him. What Abraham was able to do is snap his fingers and have, get ready for this number, in his own household, 318 trained fighting men. He snapped his fingers, say, hey, my nephew, who means a lot to me, is in trouble. We're going to go rescue him right now. And this army of men hops to mount their camels or whatever, pick up their scimitars or whatever their weapons are, and they appear. And guess what, everybody? They get Lot back. They rescue Lot. And I think that Abraham would look at so many atomized guys. I just look at the way that we use these freaking, I don't have any with me right now, but the AirPods. Nobody even walks the dog anymore without having something in their ears that basically are like holding a sign that says, don't talk to me. Don't connect with me. Don't bother me. I'm in my own world consuming content. That is so common. I think Abraham would look at the regular guy around us and he goes, you guys have got to be connected to other men. You are so weak if you are not connected to other men. You are so vulnerable to the culture, vulnerable to the enemy, vulnerable to your own lusts, your own flesh, if you aren't deeply known by other men. I'm just being reminded of this while I'm talking. I have mentioned this before. I hope there's a groundswell of excitement and craving for this thing, but it's almost fully baked. We're about to hand off to the world get a better title for it at the moment, but a financial transparency Bible study that we're going to hand to you and say, get you a group of men around you, walk through this 6-week study so that you are fully known by the men around you. And they'll know what your budget looks like, and they'll know what your investments look like, and they'll know what your giving looks like. And I know that's a kind of a scary proposition, but it's not scary if you think, well, all 6 guys in my group are all going to do it. So they're all going to be honest. So I can be honest. You do that thing at the end, and the amount of relief and strength that you feel because you're actually known by some guys that you trust. You actually have another brain or two that have kind of looked over your financial world, and you have something to compare your life to. And you go like, hey, me and these dudes, we're all walking the same direction. Just that tiny, I mean, we're talking about a 6-week study, but that's that one little increment to give you a feel for the strength that comes from knowing I'm not alone in the things I'm trying to do with my family. I'm not alone in wanting to stand against the culture that seems to be crouching over my children and wants to gobble them whole. I'm not going to let it happen. He had 318 men under his own roof. When there's trouble, Abraham mounts up and they ride out. And you could get some serious junk done in your life if you had 318 trained fire-spitting men around you. And I think that around the campfire, Abraham would say, it's great that you guys are meeting with me because I'm a famous stranger. Are you guys regularly meeting with each other all the time? Are you sharing your hearts? Are you praying together? Are you seeking the word? All right, last one. This is Genesis 15. I think that he would tell us, actively seek children. Like that should just be for a young man who's just thinking, I don't know, I want to make $1 million. I've had men in the last year tell me that when I think of my goal before I turn 25, it's to make $1 million. Never said a word about wife or family, but wanted to be a millionaire. I think Abram would say, not only seek children, but seek to get that DNA as far into the future as possible, which is exactly what you're describing, Mark. You're actually trying to make considerations for your generations in the way that you're thinking and planning and saving right now, which is so exciting. Let me just read you a passage, and I'd like to dramatize it to you as I am wont to do. I like to dramatize some Bible. Genesis 15, okay, it says that the word of the Lord came to Abram in a vision. Think of Abram. He has this vision, and God says to him, imagine how you would feel if the God of the universe said to you, do not be afraid, Abram. I am your shield, your very great reward. And Abram then said, gee, Lord, I sure am grateful that you're my shield and my reward. That means so much to me. It gives me a warm feeling. I want to go write a devotional book about it. This is a very special moment between me and the God of the universe. That is not what happened. Let's remember that a few chapters before is when God made the promise to Abraham, I'm going to make you the father of many nations. You'll have all these children. Here we are in chapter 15, and God makes this statement out of the clear blue sky from all we know. Do not be afraid, Abram. I am your shield, your very great reward. And Abram replied with, sovereign Lord, what can you give me since I remain childless? And the one who will inherit my estate is this dope Eliezer of Damascus. And Abram said, you have given me no children, so a servant in my household is my heir. He's like, the guy that runs my properties, I guess he would be the one that would get everything if I died, because you still have not given me a child. He was not grateful that God had appeared to him. He was not satisfied. Oh, great. Thank you for telling me you're my shield and my reward. He had the audacity to say to God, thank you for the relationship that we have. That's very nice. My life depends on it. That's very good. But here's the problem. You promised me children, and where is my son? I want my son, he says to God. So he has the same kind of, like, you know, that thing that was in Jacob that's like, grabbing God, wanting a blessing. Abraham had that same thing too. And he would say, this is part of what destiny, my destiny in God looks like. This is my life in you. Where is my son? So God gave Abraham this vision, but from chapter 15 onward, Abe had in his mind a very, very, very long lineage. And he would not leave well enough alone. And I think that if we can appreciate that greed, and I mean that in a good way, this demand that was built into Abraham's soul, that I want to be the father of a great nation. I've been very patient. I have a barren wife. I've trained all of these great men around me. That's great. I want my own son. I want someone to be my heir. I want to start thinking multi-generationally. When you then think of the sacrifice of Isaac that's going to come between 18 and 30 years after this demand, it's unthinkable that this man's faith, which Hebrews later tells us, he was trusting that God could raise people from the dead. He was actually thinking that, because he's like, everything is based on this kid that God has given me. He's given me unbelievable wealth. I could buy whatever I want. Doesn't mean anything to me. I have a relationship with the one true God. That's very nice. That's good. And the thing that he made me to do, that he's called to me, that he put me into, it demands that we have this child of promise. So this actively seeking children, Michael Beausejour, he said that there was a light bulb went off in his brain when he was 22. He's looking at marriage. He had a time in his life when he wanted to have athletic accomplishments. He played golf in college. He was on the pro-am tour he was on, and he starting to make headway. The light bulb went on for him, and he thought, what I want is wealth from a biblical standpoint. I don't want to pile up dollars. I want wealth. And he thought, I have to pursue a kind of career that's going to allow me to have family the way that I want. So he pivoted his whole life. They've just announced that they are pregnant with their 9th child, and he intends to continue to expand the tent pegs, because he did take this advice from Abram, which is actively seek children. He's like, we're going to have as many kids as doesn't drive my wife crazy, and that we can physically fit into our home, which that's quite a lot, turns out.
That's awesome to hear. I mean, do you think that, so there's the principle that we should seek children. I think you and I would both have taken more children than we have.
Yes.
Do you think that, it seems to me anecdotally, like more and more 20-something marrieds, even inside of Christian circles, are saying, I'm going to wait.
Yes.
Or maybe even, in some cases, we aren't sure the children are for us.
Yes.
I know you and I have spoken directly to that in the past. What is the English translation of the specific words that Father Abraham has for those people when they make this announcement? Abraham, I hear you. I agree with you that children are a blessing. But for us, we're really working on ourselves.
I think that Abraham would say to that mindset that you are pagans. I think that's what he would say, is that that's how pagans think. They think for the moment. I think he would blast those people with much harsher words than even I would use for describing people. I think he would say it's godless. I think this is what he would say. It's not kingdom thinking. It's short-sighted, and it is self-centered. And I think that's what he would say. Now, I just said some very strong words. So I want to say my caveats are, there's all sorts of reasons that people don't have children. I'm not here to, definitely not here to judge or castigate somebody that cannot get pregnant, been there. And I'm not there to judge anybody that for whatever reason they say, we do want children. We love the idea of children. And there are extenuating circumstances that have come to play. And for whatever reason, we have none. We have one. We have two. Whatever. I bless you. I'm your friend. I believe in you. And that still, I don't think there would be any caveats with what Abraham would say about the situation if he were to plop on this planet at this time, not knowing what fertility looks like in 2024. We are not as fertile as people used to be, et cetera, et cetera.
We can caveat that with some families are still quite fertile. Case in point, our friends, the Beauséjours.
Yes. We have to make sure they don't sit too close to each other in church, or there might be a baby happen. Yeah.
Well, I'm appreciative of Abraham for being willing to go through the legit trauma that was involved in
traveling
to our era.
Yeah.
And that he could even get his stuff together enough to share his thoughts with us. But I love the idea of what would Abraham have to say to us. I wish that we could channel the old guy to come and midrash some of our disciples. But whether we're 22 and newlyweds or 60, I think we all have still much to learn and much to emulate from old Abe.
That's right. He's the picture for us of a family leader. We want to not only be his sons and trained by him, we want to take those lessons and the training. We want to lead based on his example. So I bless everybody that wants that for your life. bless you as you run your home and your dough like a biblical boss like Abraham.
Hey, if you liked this content, be sure to like it and subscribe and share it with somebody. And remember, no matter how you're doing and leading your family, God's love for you is huge and His grace is greater.